Okay, we are reviewing the first drasha in the Drashas Haran, which is the drasha on Bereishis. So the Ran starts off by saying that the world was created from some kind of primordial matter, that Hashem either created one thing, one type of matter that everything came from, or there were two types, Shemayim and Aretz, and that would be hinted to in the first pasuk, Bereishis bara Elokim es Shemayim es Aretz. Those were two types of things. But everything either created from one thing, or the Greeks called the Hiuli, some type of matter, and everything came from that, or two types of matter, Shemayim and Aretz. But either the way, everything came from that, and then, whichever way you learn, whether it's this one thing, or two things that the world was created from, it was then broken up into the four Yesodos, which is Esh, Ruach, Afar, Mayim, fire, wind, water, earth. So those are the four prime. There's the primordial matter, the first thing, and that's broken up into the four yesodos. That's hinted to in the second pasuk about Varetz Yisato Vavo. That lists the four other yesodos. Okay, so why? Why did Hashem create everything from one thing or two at most? And that is because simple number one, why not? Oh, why create a zillion things if you create one thing? But more fundamentally, the Ran says, is that if you want, let's say, mankind to be able to get sustenance from a plant, so it has to be made from similar stuff, or else if a human would eat a plant, it won't make him any better, because if he couldn't relate to it in any way, if it was a totally different thing, so then it wouldn't satiate the person, it wouldn't help them live. Now that everything comes from the same general stuff, so a person can digest a plant or an animal or whatever the person needs to eat and breathe and all that stuff, you need it to be something that a person can digest. So everything had to be made from the same thing so that people could survive and thrive. Okay, so now when you take these elements and put them together, you get something that is better than the sum of its parts, right? It's water and fire, whatever it is. Put them together and you get things on earth like plants and animals and people and whatever. So when you take individual things and put them together, you get something better than the sum of its parts. That's why the Ran says, a Chazal always talking about the importance of having respect for a tzibur of Yidden. Such as when Moshe Rabbeinu was criticized, because he said to the Jewish people, Shimuna Hamorim, he called the Jewish people rebellious. So the Ran says, the individuals were deserving of being called that because they were being rebellious. But the group as a whole should not have been called rebellious. There's a certain extra level you need to have, the person needs to have a respect for the tzibur. And that is similar to when we bring the Ketores, we have the simanim, the different samanim, the different things that a person, that we bring as part of the Ketores, different spices. One of them is the chelbana, famously, that smells awful, and it's supposed to represent the Rishayim. Why on earth do we need to put that in our beautiful Ketores as an offering to Hashem, because that's what Hashem says he wants. In other words, and not only that, it's not kosher without the chelbana. It must have the chelbana. In other words, Hashem wants everything to be part of the Ketores, because just like in the Ketores, the Ran suggests it may in and of itself have a bad smell, but when put together with the other samanim, it brings out their flavor, it brings out their taste. It's this idea that when you put different things together, even sometimes bad things, the sum is greater than the new thing is better than the sum of its parts. So that's why when you have a tzibur, you have all different types that get in together. So that is a great thing, and that's why Chazal has always said you had to have respect for a tzibur, even if individuals in that tzibur are not so great, some of them. Okay, so now the Ran asks that the beginning of Koheles seems to be a contradiction of this. Because in the beginning of Koheles, he says everything is hevel avalim, everything won't last, everything will be destroyed, and he seems to prove this by them listing the four yesodos, kol hayamim, holchim, whatever. He seems to talk about the four yesodos at the beginning, and says that they all move. They're all movable. They're holy chela, whatever, like the yam holy chela. I forgot the pasuk. Anyway, it's saying all the four yesodos move, and it's taken to that you should know. It's a davar pashut that things that are movable do not last forever. Things that move, and therefore the four yesodos, since they are moving or move, they will not last forever. And therefore, by definition, everything, since everything comes from them, so nothing can be better than that. In other words, that's the proof that everything won't last, because look, all the four yesodos are things that can't last. So, but what do you mean? We said that the individual, that when you put things together, they can be greater than the sum of their parts. So the answer is that when you put similar things together, you're right, they can't be different, in the sense that if you take five things that are exactly the same, there'll be more of that. If you take five bad people who are all thieves and put them together, they're going to be super thieves. You're not going to make it weaker, you're going to make it stronger. That kind of tzibur is no good. That's, and when you put the same thing together, it will be stronger. But if you put different things together in a group, even if they each have bad things, when you put them together, that will be better than the sum of its parts. So, just give an example to each side. When you put like things together, they get stronger. That's what he says, Chazal say, that when Tovim Ashnaim in Echad, that two are better than one, because if one gets cold, the other one will provide warmth, body warmth. So the Ran says, what is that supposed to be teaching us? He means that just like by body warmth is something that a person doesn't try to convey to his friend, just if you're up against the person, they're going to feel your body warmth. So he says that when two like people get together, two friends get together, so just being near each other is mechazik the other one. Because you don't have to do something for your friend, just being with your friend is mechazik them. But that's the idea of putting like things together. Then they get stronger. But that's why, and that's why kinus for tzaddikim is good, and Chazal tell us, and pizur for rishayim is good. Tzaddikim being together is good, rishayim being together is bad. And that's why Yaakov sent Shimon and Levi, spread them out all amongst the Jewish people, right? They didn't have their own nachla, they were spread out, because Shimon and Levi had this aspect of them that had to do with Kas, what they did with Shechem and Yosef, so he didn't want them together, because when you put like things together, they'll get stronger, and that's a problem, so you want them to split apart, or if you have good things, you want them to stay together. But when it comes to people with unlike issues, then you could have this idea of individual things are better than the sum of its parts, in the sense that if you take someone who is super cheap and put them in a group with someone who's a spendthrift, between the two of them, they're both going to get better because the two of them even each other out. So if you have a group of people with different issues, that's when a group together can be even better with negative things in the group, because like the Ran says, one could bring out this, the negative can bring out the spice in some way in the good, but it the point is it makes the bad less bad, because he's with a group of people who are not bad in that area. So that's the idea. How, so if, again, if you have things that all have the same issue, let's say they all move, like the Carlos was saying, so that it can't last. It can't last forever, since they all, if the yesodos, all four yesodos are movable, they can't last forever, so that's the same idea. Put that together, nothing, it's all going to be, anything created from them will not last forever. But when you put things with different qualities, pluses and minuses together, they can become even better. Okay, and he says that's the explanation for the Dor HaFlaga, says the Ran. So he's, in the Dor HaFlaga is right, the Tower of Babel, they built this tower. So the Ran says, the whole story is so strange, seems so strange. They built the tower for what? The Dor HaFlaga built the tower for what? To go fight with Hashem? The Ran says, if that's what they were doing, they built the tower to go climb up the tower and take up swords and start waving at our clouds. The Ran says, if they were that stupid, they shouldn't have gotten any onish at all, because they should have been putter for being because they were a shota. Like, how dumb can you be, really? That's what they thought. They're going to build a tower and take up their swords and start throwing it to heaven. So they weren't stupid. So what was the point of this tower, and what was the punishment? If the punishment was that they're building the tower just to show to fight, like theoretically with Hashem, symbolically with Hashem, but the point is to say that they didn't believe in Hashem or they wanted to fight with Hashem. Okay, so then just splitting them up then shouldn't have been enough. You would think they should get a worse punishment. The Ran says, the answer is that they didn't do anything wrong by getting together. That wasn't the problem, that they got together. The problem, and the tower that they built, it makes sense they should build a big tower. If all of humankind is going to live in the same valley in Shinar, then they should have a big palace where the one who's in charge sits to make people, in awe of the king. That was fine. And them all getting together, that was fine too. The problem is this issue. You put a bunch of everyone was idol worshippers in those days, except for the one or two in history. You know, there was the Avrams and the whatever. Always a couple people who weren't, but the overwhelming majority of society was idol worshippers. If they're all together in one group, then the idol worship gets stronger. And then there'd be no room for Avram. There'd be no room, Nimrod throws Avram in the fiery furnace so he came out alive, and he would run away to where exactly? If there was nowhere else to run, we'd have a problem. So Hashem needed the world to be spread out so that when people attacked Yirei Hashem, they would have somewhere to run. Just like today, he says the Ran, when we get kicked out of one nation, we have somewhere to go, we run to the next one. But if everybody lived in one place, there'd be nowhere to run. So that's why Hashem's punishment for the Dor HaFlegah wasn't so much a punishment, it was just Hashem saw what would come of this, and therefore, that's why he split them up. Okay, now the Ran says, so he wants to, now that he talked about how important the awe of the Tzibur is, because how great they are as a group, so how could he speak to them about Torah, and certainly about the Maaseh Bereishis, which is what he wants to talk about, because he says, talking about Maaseh Bereishis, the Gemara, Chazal tell us you're not allowed to talk about Maaseh Bereishis in front of two people, certainly in front of a public. And if you don't know what you're talking about, that's stam gaiva to talk about things that you don't know what you're saying. So, how am I going to talk about Maaseh Bereishis? I'm not allowed if I knew, and if I didn't know, it's stam gaiva. So the Ran says, digresses a little bit. Let me tell you a little bit about gaiva. He says, if you talk about things you don't know anything about, that's gaiva. And the pasuk says, "Lifnei shever gaon," before a person is broken, they are haughty. In other words, they become haughty, and then Hashem brings them down. So he doesn't want to talk about it if he doesn't know anything about it. And secondly, why that is that gaiva brings a person down. He says that in everything in nature, if a thing is put in a place where it doesn't belong, in other words, like he's talking about here, if someone talks about Maaseh Bereishis and they don't understand it fully. I imagine the Ran did understand pretty high level, but he's saying if someone talks about the Maaseh Bereishis and they don't understand it, so that's gaiva. They're putting themselves in a place they don't believe. He says all of nature, things don't last in places if they're put in a place where they don't belong. And he says also everything that is goes up is comes down. That's the nature of the world. What goes up must come down. So he says that it's like the water comes up, evaporates, it goes up to the heaven, and then comes right back down again. And people step on dirt, and eventually they die, and dirt covers them. The things on the bottom come to the top, the things on the top come to the bottom. So that's a symbol of how being a Baal Gaiva doesn't pay in the end. It always brings a person down. He also explains that that's why the Os, the rainbow, that Hashem made after the flood. So we know the rainbow should have existed anyway, the way we have nature today. A rainbow is just a result after the rain and the sun hits the moisture in the air, but it makes a rainbow. So he says that's all because we're in today's world. But he says nature should have it, you would think. When he says nature should have it, I think he means, because I think that's what he says. Another, you would expect that water should not be held back by the sea, right? Water should just be covering the beach. And if it doesn't, it's somewhat not natural. Obviously, it is natural because that's nature, but it looks like not natural, that kind of thing. I think he's saying the original nature is that the lower things on earth like water, should have overpowered things in heaven like the yesod of Eish, right? Mayim and Ofer are the two yesodos on earth. Eish and Ruach are the ones that are supposed to be in the heavens. So he said the lower things should have been stronger than the upper things, and therefore when light would have shined on water, it should have the water should have overpowered it and knocked off the light, therefore not creating a rainbow. Hashem changed it after the Mabul to make it that the light shines through and causes that whole the refraction that makes the rainbow. So that's how that was created. Okay, anyway, the Ran says, I'm not talking about Maaseh Bereishis. Forget the Maaseh Bereishis. Obviously, Chazal say not to talk about it in public. I'm not going to talk about it. But he does want to say, what are we referring to when we say Maaseh Bereishis shouldn't be talked in public? What is this Maaseh Bereishis referring to? So he goes to the Rambam says Maaseh Bereishis means knowledge of the physical world, like an expert physicist. That's Maaseh Bereishis. So the Ran says, how could that be? Chazal said, don't talk about physics in public. Why would they ask for something like that? And furthermore, he says, what would be the gvul? What would be the boundary? Like farmers, can they talk about agriculture to themselves, to other people? Are they allowed to talk about that publicly? He's a doctor, can they talk about... He says, we're all being Dorish Maisha Bereshis constantly, if it means just talking about the physical world. So rather, the Ran says, it doesn't mean a physicist. It means knowledge, deep knowledge of this world. That part is true. It does mean knowledge of this world, but it means the kind of knowledge of this world that one could only come to through Nevuah. I mean, things you can't know by scientific experiments and by observing nature. It's the things that require Nevuah to know. That's the discussion of the physical world that is called Maisa Bereishis. The Ran asks, the Mishnah that tells us not to talk about Maisa Bereishis in public also says not to talk about Maisa Merkava. Maisa Merkava is a story in Yechezkel about Hashem's Merkava, his chariot. So he says, based on what I, the Ran, am saying, that Maisa Bereishis doesn't mean the physical world, it means the spiritual side of the physical world, or whatever, well, maybe not limited to that, but things that you need Nevuah to know. So then, what's the difference between that and Maisa Merkava? If I'm telling you that Maisa Bereishis means knowing things that require Nevuah to know about this world, that should be that means knowledge of the spiritual side of things, that should be the similar to Maisa Merkava. So he explains, no. Maisa Merkava means the story of Maisa Merkava that you can't talk about publicly is the connection. I'll start with the other way. Maisa Bereishis that you can't talk about publicly is the things that, like you said, you need Nevuah for, and that refers to the knowledge of how the spiritual realms work vis-a-vis us on earth, meaning everything on this earth comes from this spiritual world. We are come from there. So knowledge of the spiritual world will help you understand the physical world because it comes from there. That's Maisa Bereishis that you can't talk about publicly, like the Malachim and whatever the spiritual realms are, to know how that works, which will help you know how things on this earth work. And Maisa Merkava is understanding the angels' relationship to Hashem, Kaviyachal. Hashem, they are obviously created by Hashem, and their connection to Hashem is Maisa Merkava. I don't know what that means, but whatever. The Malachim's relationship to Hashem is the Maisa Merkava. Understanding that is Maisa Merkava. And understanding the relationship of the Malachim, or the spiritual realms, to earth, that's Maisa Bereishis. All those are spiritual things, and those are things that cannot be talked about publicly. Okay, so anyway, this idea that we are totally limited, that science can only take you so far, there are certain things like knowledge of the spiritual realms and parts of this world that you cannot understand without Nevuah, he says. For example, his example is you can observe that a person laughs. You could even see, figure out in there what muscles make the person laugh. But why do people laugh? He says that requires Nevuah to know why it is that the human being laughs. Not too many animals laugh. I don't know if hyenas count, but it's generally, why does the human being laugh? So, if you know the spiritual world and it comes from there, you'll understand that kind of stuff. But you can't observe it on Earth. So he says this sort of thing, that there are things that cannot be understood even by scientific investigation, that's all spoken about in Mizmor Kuf Lamed Tes and Tehillim Kuf Lamed Tes. And then the Ran speaks a little bit about that. We're going to say it Bekitzer, what the Ran says, but he says that that's what it says in Mizmor Kuf Lamed Tes, Hashem Chikartani Vateida. Hashem, you Chikaron is that type, sounds like scientific investigation, but what he means to say, the Ran says, is Hashem, at least you know. we do Chakira, even after our scientific exploration, we don't understand anything. You, Hashem, you know. Atayadati shifti vakumi. He says, you understand my sitting and standing. What does that mean? So the Ran explains, it means, I know I sit and stand, but you understand, you Hashem understand why I can get up and why I can sit down and all that. The deeper things of why things happen, how things happen, you Hashem understand that. And therefore, because and he also, Bansa Lerei Meirachok, we're saying, Hashem, you understand what my friend thinks from far away. What does that mean? When I see my friend up close, I can read his facial expressions. I know what he means. Again, because all we cannot see is the what's in front of our eyes or what can be observed under a microscope or with scientific exploration. But Hashem, you don't need them to be close for you to understand them. Hashem, you know what people are thinking from anywhere in the world. And therefore, the Mizmor goes on, there's nowhere to hide from Hashem because Hashem knows where a person knows everything and is omnipotent and omniscient. Hashem is everywhere, knows everything. So, therefore, we end off, Li mayakru re'echa kel ma'atzmu rasheim. So, we're saying being close to Hashem is so great because how great is their heads? So the Rasheim, what does he mean by that? Great, their heads, meaning Hashem. We can't even understand the beginning, the Rashim, as in like the Rashi Prakim, like the, we don't even understand the table of contents of earth or anything. We understand nothing. Even that's too great for us in Hashem. You understand everything. So that's what that Mizmor refers to. If you want to look it up in the Ran and in that Mizmor, you'll see it goes through a lot of the Pesukim there. Okay, next. Now we go on to how the world was created. So the Ran says he's not going to talk about anything he's not allowed to talk about. He's just going to talk about the basic Pesukim. Okay, so we find the order of creation, the Ran says, goes from least chashuv to most chashuv. So the least chashuv is the yesodos, like he said, the thing that everything comes from. That's like things at its lowest level, earth, fire, whatever, or this primordial matter. And from that came the earth, fire, water, air. That's the least chashuv, and it culminates with the most chashuv, which is mankind. So now he goes to talk about them one by one. So, besides the yesodos being created on the first day, the Ran says, there was also light, as the Pasuk says, by Hior. But he says that light was not enough to function by. That night, that light was just to tell the was time, to make a time difference, that there was day and night. That light was the way we counted time. So we could say that's how when time was created. That's what the light started to do, was really for time, but light wasn't completed, he says, until Hashem created the sun and the moon on the fourth day. Okay, so Hashem creates the heaven and earth, fine. The light, then we have the water and the earth, and plants are created on the same day as earth. They don't get their own special day. So the Ran says that's because they weren't chashuv enough to get their own special day, similar to rocks. So you see, this is how the Ran understands why each thing was done on a separate day. Hashem doesn't need time to do things. It's Hashem wanted to do this. It was split up in things based on how chashuv it was. So plants weren't chashuv enough to get their own day, like rocks. So it was just created in the same time as earth, the yabasha. And then after that, you would think the next day should be animals, but the problem was is that we needed light for them. Now, how did the plants function without light? Plants also need light to function. I don't know the answer to that. There are, as we mentioned, there are midrashim that says the plants didn't grow anyway till Adam was around. Like there was no Adam to daven for the plants to come forth, and plants only started growing once Adam was created. So that may be the answer to that. But either way, Hashem needed to create the sun and the moon so that the animals could survive. So first came the sun and the moon, then come the animals, but specifically fish and birds. And then the next day is, the sixth day is animals and man. Now, man, you would think, should deserve his own day. But the Ran says a fascinating thing. Man does not get his own day because man and animals are often the same. Meaning a person has to choose to become different than animals. Amazing thing. Animals and man are created the same day because every other thing in creation that had its own day is its own day. It's its own special thing. Whatever chashivas it has, it has. Man is not necessarily better than animals if a man chooses to act like an animal. Then the person is the same as the animal. However, man is created last because he certainly has that potential to be the most chashuv, so he's created last. Furthermore, he's put in Gan Eden. Gan Eden is a place where he doesn't need to work for his parnasa, right? Everything grew naturally. He wouldn't have to think about Gashmias at all. And the point is that is so that he could focus on Ruchnias, focus on his spirituality. And the Ran adds, man was supposed to live forever. How? So the Ran says, don't think that Adam was created originally that his body should have lasted forever, like we said from Qehelet. Anything that moves around, stuff doesn't last forever. what it was supposed to be, that his neshama was supposed to be so powerful that it would overpower the guf, similar to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai lived up there in a body for 40 days and 40 nights with no food, no drink. How'd that happen? If a person's soul gets so powerful, they overpower the guf. So that was the way Adam Rishon, before he sinned, was like that. His soul was so powerful it overcame the guf, and his physical needs were very minimal, and therefore his soul was so powerful it could have lived forever. I understand then, right, with Tchias HaMishim, that's the idea. It's supposed to be back to that level. So now the Ran says, this is the explanation, what I just said, of the chait of Adam and Chava eating from the Eitz Hadas, as he's going to explain. Because there's a question. Why does it say, Hashem tells him, ki biyom acholcha, whatever, I forget the lashon of the pasuk, as soon as you eat from the Eitz Hadas, most tomos, they'll die. So, is that a punishment? Was it a punishment that when Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, he died? If that was Adam's punishment, that eating from the Eitz Hadas he was punished by death, so then why did he curse the earth? Why did Hashem curse the earth too? And so the explanation is, that it wasn't a punishment. Adam dying and not living forever and ate from the Eitz Hadas, it was not a punishment. It was a natural outgrowth of what he did. Because eating from the Eitz Hadas made a person, had this effect that it made a person more gashmiistic. It made a person more connected to this world and made his body stronger. The only way Adam, as we just said, was going to last forever, if his soul was so powerful, it would overcome that guf. Eating from this Eitz Hadas made a person more megushim, made them more gashmiistic, made them more physical, lowered the person. It didn't make their body weaker. It made the body stronger, more powerful, more physical, and that memela made the person that he couldn't last forever because his soul wasn't as powerful anymore. Now his body was more powerful. And the Ran explains that was the mistake of Chava. Because Hashem told Chava, through Adam, whatever, Chava was told not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. And Chava knew, how she knew this, I don't know, Chava knew that there's no such thing, Chava thought that meant if she ate from the Eitz Hadas, it would be poison, like physical poison. And then the thing is, but the pasuk says she saw it was a good smell, good to eat. What does that mean? So the Ran says, because poison, anything that is a natural poison in this world, says the Ran, will not smell good and taste good. It'll taste bitter and bad. It's Hashem put that naturally into the world, that actual poison does not smell and taste good. It smells and tastes bad. And she realized that since the Eitz Hadas smelled and tasted good, looked good, whatever, all that, it couldn't have been poisoned. So therefore she thought it would be good for her. That was her mistake. And when she ate it, and she wasn't wrong. She was right. The Eitz Hadas was good for the body. That was the problem. That was exactly the problem. It made the body stronger. It made the person more physical. And when she ate it, so she became more physical. When man ate it, he became more physical. That's how the whole story happened. So they got punished. So what was the punishment of Adam? It wasn't to die. We said that was just a natural outgrowth of eating something physical that made the person more physical. So his punishment was that he got kicked out of Gan Eden. Why was that a punishment? Because Adam made himself more physical. So because of that, he was made to be even more physical. He was kicked out of Gan Eden, where he would have to work for a living. And then you can't spend all your day thinking about Ruchnius if you have to work all day. If you have to worry about your Parnassa, and you have to worry about, even if a person's rich, they have to worry about other physical things. So the person was kicked out of Gan Eden in that they couldn't. He couldn't focus on Ruchnius anymore, and it wasn't going to be as easy for him to be spiritual. That's why, in a sense, like we said, Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. Shabbos is like Gan Eden. Shabbos is when we can focus on Ruchnius. So that's what Adam was constantly in Gan Eden, and he was kicked out of that, so that lowered the person. That was his punishment. He has to work back to get back to that level. And the woman and the snake, they're both punished in that they wanted to strengthen their bodies by eating from the Eitz. Well, at least the woman wanted to strengthen her body by eating from the Eitz Hadas, and it had the opposite. She used to be able, her body, the Ran explains, must have been in a better state that it could handle pregnancy better, and it wouldn't hurt when she gave birth, and there was changed to be lower, and it does hurt. And the snake's punishment, now I got to talk a little bit about the snake's punishment. How was the snake punishment punished? It says, Eva Ashis Bencha, right, Hashem will make this enmity, this hatred between humans and snakes. So the Ran says, what kind of punishment is that exactly? The snake was punished in the sense that mankind hates snakes? Do we hate snakes? We don't hate snakes. We're afraid of snakes. We don't walk around with this burning desire of, I hate snakes, I want to kill snakes. That would be bad for the snake, because then it would be shot and killed and attacked all day long. We don't have hate for snakes. We'd rather never see a snake in our lives. People are afraid of snakes, and even if they're not afraid, they're not interested. They don't walk around with a hate of snakes. So what does this mean, this hate, that there'll be this hate between mankind and snakes? So the Ran explains that the hate means that since we will be the polar opposite of the snake. In other words, a person doesn't like things that are the opposite of them. They're more likely to like things that are like them. The snake was going to be the opposite of mankind, because a human being is the only thing that walks on 2 feet, not, you know, fully erect on 2 feet. There are things that animals that walk on 2 feet, but not erect. Only humans walk erect on 2 feet. A snake was the polar opposite, flat on the ground. A snake eats dirt. And the Gemara says that either he's only satiated by dirt, or everything tastes like dirt. And that's all the same thing, because the dirt is the lowest thing there is. So the snake is only satiated by dirt, or everything tastes like dirt. The point is that it's very separated from us, where we're the opposite, we're the highest, and the snake is the lowest in the physical creation. Okay, anyway, after that whole story, after the world is created and the Adam is in Gan Eden and then out of Gan Eden, from this point on, everything works the same. Nature goes on the way it is. So the Ran explains, if you look, but when Hashem is creating the world in the 7 days, 6 days, whatever, so it always uses the Elohim, because that is the name of Baal HaKochos Kulam. That name Elohim refers to Hashem being all-powerful, so when he's creating new things, he's called Elohim. Then, when Adam is in Gan Eden, he's referred to as Hashem Elohim, and that's because it was mostly Hashem, which is making the world exist in its current state. And there was Elohim also because, as we said, mankind shouldn't have been able to live forever, but because he was so spiritual, his neshama overpowered his guf, and he would have lived forever. That required the Elohim, because it wasn't natural. So that's, again, Hashem being all-powerful. And then after Adam gets kicked out of Gan Eden, we just find Hashem, the regular Hashem, because that's the world existing as it does today. So the Ran says that Hashem put Ma'aseh Bereishis at the beginning of the Torah, since it's the foundation of everything, meaning that the world did not always exist. It's Hashem who created it. And that's the main thing, really. And that also, that things that strengthen the body do not necessarily strengthen the soul, as you just explained with the story of Adam, which teaches us that when the body dies, that does not mean the soul died. In fact, that just the opposite. When the body is destroyed, the soul is stronger, and that the soul goes on and connects to Hashem. And that's why, the Ran says, that's why the Torah tells us always the schar of mitzvos. If you notice, the Torah, when it describes the reward a person gets for Torah and mitzvos, it always talks about what you get in this world. Like we say in Shema, if you follow the Torah, if you follow the Torah, the rains will come in the right time. It does not say, also you'll get Olam Haba. Why is that? So the Ran says, it's for this reason, it's to show us that if when we're in our physical state, when we're in a body, still we can connect to Hashem, and that when we do Averus and mitzvos, He gives us stuff. So certainly when the body is gone, will connect to Hashem. Another reason, the Ran says, that Hashem always talks about, the Torah always talks about the reward in this world, is because it makes the Torah distinct from other religions, because other religions can't promise you this world because they're bogus. They have no control over the world, so they have to promise you that if you do mitzvos, you know, something will happen to you in Olam Haba. But the Torah can be distinct, and it can offer proof now. It says if the Jewish people follow the Torah, the rains will come in the right time. You could see that now with your own two eyes, because no one can prove to you what happens in the next world. But we can prove to you what happens now, so that's why the Torah can show its uniqueness and its truth, and that it's telling you things in this world that will happen. So you know that the Torah is true, and that you know Hashem is connected to mankind. He says that this is similar to the Yisod of Yetzias Mitzrayim, in that we see that Hashem was connected to Jewish people in this world and showed things in this world like He did in Mitzrayim, where Hashem showed that He controls the world, runs the world, He could do miracles the magicians couldn't do. Hashem did open miracles. This is again to show that Hashem is running the world and is interested in mankind, specifically in especially the Yidden, and connects to us even when we're physical, based on our Torah and mitzvos. And he says, this is what we say in Vezchanan, and this is the explanation of the pasuk: "Ushmartim asisem ki yichach maschem v'minaschem." Keep the Torah, because this is your wisdom. And when the goyim see that, they'll see mi goy gadol shelo chukim u'mishpatim tzadikim. They'll say, "Who is this great nation that has all these righteous laws?" So he says, "What do you mean? They're going to see that we keep chukim. They're going to see that we don't eat pork and that we don't wear shatnez. They're going to say, wow, you're so smart." Those are the things that the guy make fun of us about. Why? What does it mean that they're going to see us keeping the chukim and say we're so smart? So he says it's because the Goyim are going to see that when we keep the Torah, Hashem connects to us. Because we keep Hashem's Torah, Hashem is connected to us and does good things for us, answers our tefillos, and then they see, oh, it's because they keep the Torah. Wow, what a special nation. And it's especially the chukim. Because if we had a nation, if all we did was we had an agreement that we wouldn't steal and kill, people would understand that the Jewish people are doing this for good reasons, and that's why God likes them. But if we stand on our heads, you know, if we do things like shatnez, so he says it's similar to a doctor. If a doctor tells you, you know, oh, the person has cancer, take chemo, okay. But if the doctor tells you, if a person has cancer, stand on your head and say, up, down three times, and the person will be cured from cancer, they'd make fun of them. But if it worked, for whatever reason, if it worked, they'd say, wow, this guy's a genius. In other words, if you say something absolutely crazy, but then, hey, look, it worked, then they'll say, wow, this guy's amazing. So they're going to say, how great is the Jewish people? They keep all these crazy, these seemingly strange laws, but because of that, Hashem is connected to them. They must be so smart. In other words, we're just following the Torah, but they'll say, wow, what a great nation. Okay, so then the Ran says that even though the Torah never speaks directly about reward in Olam Haba, it does hint to it, like through stories, through Avraham Avinu, for example. He says Avraham Avinu was told to kill his son, and he did. He would have sacrificed Yitzchak. So the Ran says if there was no such thing as Olam Haba, and all the reward and punishment was limited to this world, it doesn't make any sense at all that anybody would sacrifice their son, especially Avraham waited 100 years, his one and only son, and he should sacrifice him for what? For some gain or loss in this world? It wouldn't be worth it. It must be that this world is nothing, and the main thing is Olam Haba. That's why, you know, so that's hinting to that there's Olam Haba and then there's a reward in the next world. Okay, and he says, anyway, this yesod that Hashem is interested in us and connected to us and runs this world, that's why we meant, it's the yesod of the Torah, and that's why we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at every holiday, even holidays that have nothing to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim, like on Rosh Hashanah, when we make Kiddush, we still say Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim, even though Rosh Hashanah has zip to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's to remind us, because it's the yesod, it's the foundation, everything reminds us that of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is where we know Hashem, we see from that Hashem's love for the Jewish people, and that he's directing us to, that he's connected to us and directing us to the ultimate good in Olam Haba. And that's why the last pasuk in the Torah says, the Chalaosos Vamosim, talks about all the miracles that Hashem did, Le'ini Kol Yisrael, to the eyes of all Jewish people, we all saw. Those are the bookends of the Torah. It starts off with the Yisod of the Torah, that Hashem created the world, and is right, and it didn't always exist. Hashem created the world, he's connected to mankind. The world goes based on mitzvahs and averus, and ends off with that a similar theme that Hashem is connected to mankind and runs the world now, can do all kinds of miracles now, and is interested in us and his mitzvahs. And okay, that's the end of this drasha. And this is, even though this is the first drasha, this is the one we did last because it was the hardest. So we are now done, Baruch Hashem. We're zocheh to finish. Hopefully we'll start something new.